Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM. Talkspace.com/boom. B-O-O-M.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
And welcome into a Tuesday night edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. Gavin Shaw joined, as always, by Josh Bass. We thought we were going to be in a good mood for this podcast. Tonight's supposed to be a celebration, the NBA finally back. Instead, it turned into an extremely somber night after we both witnessed Gordon Hayward's traumatic injury.
Yeah, obviously you never want to see that. Completely just gruesome, just terrible for Gordon Hayward, terrible for the Boston Celtics. This is a guy that wasn't highly recruited coming out of high school, really worked hard in his game, earned that amazing contract this summer, and you hate to see him have his season probably over after 5 minutes, and hopefully he's able to come back so his career isn't completely altered. But obviously it's a devastating blow to the NBA community and to one of the better players in the league.
Yeah, I mean, we don't have to go into the mechanics of the injury itself, because anyone who didn't watch it, I'd say don't watch it. I had that told to me, and then I went ahead and watched it anyways, and I kind of regret it. Just utterly disturbing. And then I think you laid it out pretty well there, but just this guy was finally like getting his dream in a lot of ways. Obviously, no disrespect to Utah as a franchise. I think they're one of the most maybe three or four or five most well-run organizations in the league, but he got to go from that market to playing for the Boston Celtics, which I don't care who you grew up rooting for, that's an honor beyond words. And the fact that I think what made it actually so special is that he got to do it for the guy who had faith in him when he, as you said, wasn't exceptionally highly recruited. And I think he was something like 5'8" at points when he was in high school, and clearly wasn't the guy that he turned into be. Trusted Brad Stevens, went to Butler, led that team on kind of this miraculous run to a national title game, and then came within one miracle shot of beating Duke. And those two, to me, it was kind of, they're kind of like a microcosm for their relationship you see in all those NCAA tournament games between a mid-major coach and a guy who, I mean, I know Gordon was only a sophomore at the time, but a guy who's planning on staying 3 or 4 years and really gets to develop under a coach, and just knowing how special of a person Brad Stevens is, and by all accounts how special of a person Hayward is, I as someone who is probably the furthest thing from a Celtics fan, value and respect that relationship so much, and was so looking forward to those two getting to team up again, and with Kyrie Irving and with Al Horford. If you love basketball, that was something that was really going to be a big component to making this season special, and it just ripped away 10 minutes in. I don't know how to describe that. It sucks.
Yeah, it definitely does suck. Puts a damper on things. We do have Nets basketball to discuss. The season starts tomorrow against Indiana. I know it's going to be an awkward transition, but there's really no great way to move on from this. Just got to hope that Hayward gets better and is able to recover. But let's move on to talking about the Nets, Gavin.
Yeah. All right. So they play the Indiana Pacers tomorrow. I almost called them the Indianapolis Pacers there. Why do you think? I guess they don't play in Indianapolis, so that's probably why they don't call them that.
Yeah, I feel like the Colts and Pacers need to get on the same page and really either stick with Indianapolis or stick with Indiana, because you got to find some commonality and have that unity for the teams in the city.
Well, isn't Indianapolis is a city in Indiana, right?
Yeah, but I'm assuming the Pacers play. I think the Pacers play in Indianapolis also, though.
I'm looking it up. This is great. This is great. Pacers.
Great content.
Home stadium. People are listening and just thinking like we had this whole beautiful.
Yeah, I just found it. In downtown Indianapolis.
Okay, so yeah, and then you're absolutely right. I don't get that. That's either you're both Indianapolis or you're both Indiana. That's what I love about New York. that every team is just New York. And I guess I get that's made easier when it's New York City. But again, Indianapolis to Indiana, not really a big jump. So,
well, it's like, wait, then should it be like the Manhattan Knicks instead of the New York Knicks? Because if we're going by
borough, I guess.
Go by their borough then.
Yeah, or the I didn't. That's I'm an idiot right now. I didn't even think of the Nets. All right. Anyways, they're playing.
Glad to know that you really, really have the team on your mind.
Yeah, you know what it is. People like the Knicks, like just like when you hear New York Knicks, people think of like this gritty, like underdog team. I know you don't, and Nets fans probably don't, but that's how I like to think of the Knicks, and I think how a lot of people across the country think of the Knicks, like all these guys like hustling and stuff. But if you heard the Manhattan Knicks, you would think of like dickish like Wall Streeters. And no offense to any of the Wall Streeters who listen to us, we value your business. But I think it would create more of a sense of rich snobbiness, which I think the Knicks don't really want to go for. So I like the New York Knicks.
Interesting. All right. Pitch this to James Dolan next time you see him.
Yeah, which we all know is frequent. All right, Indiana. Yeah, this game is I wouldn't watch it if I wasn't so invested in our Brooklyn Nets. I don't think it's going to be a particularly fun one. I do think it's a great opportunity for the Nets to get a win to open the season and really show off some of their offensive firepower. Indiana is not really the team necessarily built to slow them down, even if they have a couple of good individual defenders.
Yeah, there's not really going to be any defense played in this game. When you look at a lot of the guys at Indiana took on this year, Darren Collison not going to stop anyone. Bojan, of course, we know that he's not going to stop anyone.
he's Oladipo, a sleeper cell.
Oladipo is a rep, is a good defender, but he never really proven that out into being a stopper.
He's fine. Yeah,
he's fine. And then I guess Miles
Turner's fine. He's a good rim protector.
The backline defense of and really lead a unit. So I think this game is going to come down to a lot of the wing scoring, and I think that Oladipo's not that much of an efficient scorer. He's more of a volume guy, so I'm not too worried about him. I think Bojan can light it up a bit, so I think that it's really going to be important for RHJ or Damari Carroll, whoever has the primary assignment on him. And I would lean towards RHJ because I think his length can really bother Bojan. He's not going to be quick enough to go by him. I think if he can be contained, that the Nets should be in pretty good shape, because Miles Turner is a very talented player, but he's at the point of his career where when he goes off, he's going to score 25, 28. He's not going to drop 35 and just completely take over a game. I don't know if you feel differently.
No, I think he's kind of the key matchup for the Nets in this one, whether or not they can slow him down. And we're going to get into some of our questions about the centers, but especially after the ass-kicking Joel Embiid put on them, I think this game is going to be pretty telling. Obviously, Turner not the same kind of physical threat that Embiid is, and not as good of an offensive player, but he is someone who's really dynamic, who the Pacers really have high hopes for. If he can put it all together, he could be an all-star even as soon as this season. So I think it'll be a good little test, and it'll tell you just how much of a weakness that center position is for the Nets, that I think you and I are feeling maybe a little bit more confident about of late, but still feel is probably far and away the weakest spot on the team.
Yeah, I think Mozgov also struggles against guys like Turner, that really athletic stretch center that can shoot from the perimeter but also face up from about 18 feet and just take him off the dribble. That's going to be a difficult matchup, and the health defenders need to be in place. They need to be on a swivel to really make sure that Turner isn't going to just get fouled and get easy N1s all the time or just get dunks. He needs to really earn his points.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you have a matchup that interests you in this one?
Yeah. I mean, I think the Bojan, him playing against the Nets is going to be interesting. And then also Thaddeus Young, a guy, a former Net, crafty player, still just a solid guy to have on your team. But I think that Indiana is going to have some trouble. Obviously, they lost a lot of talent. When you lose Paul George, you're never going to be improved. But also, they have a big learning curve in terms of getting new guys up to speed, whether that be Collison or Bojan Oladipo as well. And then Glenn Robinson III, who's probably their best perimeter defender, he's injured, so that is someone that they relied on last year to be just a solid rotation guy that could be their most consistent defender.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's get into it on these centers. Obviously, in case you missed it, we've broken down every single position group on the Nets, going up from point guard all the way to the forwards, answering one big question about every guy in that group. And today, on the Christmas Eve of the Nets season, we break down the three centers on the roster. Going from bad to young to bad, we start off with bad Russian addition, Timofey Mozgov. Josh, do you think he's going to be better on defense than Brook Lopez was last season? And could that potentially mitigate the loss of Lopez, or will his presence on offense kind of cancel that out and kind of bomb the starting lineup?
I think that Mozgov is going to be slight negative on defense from where Brook Lopez was. They're both huge guys, and obviously when you have someone that takes up that much space, that's going to be important. But I think Brook doesn't get as much credit as he deserves. He's a very good rim protector. He's not always in position just because he's very slow-footed. But when he is in position, he makes shots really hard. He makes it really hard for guys to score at the rim. He's great at boxing out and letting his teammates get rebounds. So while his rebounding numbers might not look great on the surface, the team always rebounds better with him in there. And Mozgov, I just don't think that he is kind of up to speed. He's lost a lot in terms of health. And while he is a big body and he's going to be a solid defender, he's not really the shot-blocking presence at the rim that Brolo is. And I think that he's obviously a huge negative on offense, but also I would say that Brolo is a more consistent defender night in, night out. You know that he's always going to give you max effort, and I'm not sure what you're going to get from Mozgov.
Yeah, I don't know if I totally agree with that. I think Mozgov plays pretty hard from what I watched from him last year, and in his time on the Knicks, he doesn't have quick feet by any means, and he's kind of.
I think I meant more in terms of stamina that he's not.
A lot of minutes. No, that's absolutely fair. He does put in an effort to slide his feet. He stays low. He tries to switch on to guys. He's smart about helping and when to back off. But he has kind of like Brook Lopez and maybe even more extremely severe limitations. And that wasn't true early in his career. He had seasons where he averaged two blocks a game, even in relatively limited minutes, or at least per 36, he was averaging two blocks a game.
But he's never played more than like 25 minutes per game. So
when
you rate that out, it's going to be similar to what Brook Lopez did.
Yeah, and he's still, once he can get in position under the basket, and ironically enough, like you wouldn't think with someone with his athletic profile, this would be true. He's almost better in transition because he knows he can just go and guard the rim and he doesn't have to think about stepping out on guys or switching or anything. So if the Nets can play really good defense in front of him and make it so, he doesn't really have to think about anyone other than his own or a guard just funneled directly towards him where he only has to focus on one guy, I think he could be a relatively effective or at least not an extremely harmful scheme defender, but that's putting a lot of faith in Jeremy Lin, who's shown himself to be good, not great, and D'Angelo Russell, who's shown himself to be a bad defender, to really be locked down on the perimeter. So I think he's going to have his issues. Taking a look at him on the offensive side, we know he has some nice chemistry with Russell. Those two guys were kind of clearly happy to move together, and they have they've made some nice plays before on the pick and roll. But outside of the fact that he's like a solid dump off guy, just because he's so big, I'm kind of scared that he's going to clog the lane. And when he's in, he's not going to allow the Nets to space the floor as ideally as they otherwise would. Because when you have a guard kind of break down the defense, it will draw defenders, but not if there's a big guy just stationed underneath the basket, because then you already have a natural helper. And suddenly those open threes the Nets have been kind of killing it on in the preseason rapidly disappear. So if his three-point shot is somehow real and he can make one or two a game, that makes a world of difference. I'm not sure if I totally buy that yet. What about you, Josh?
Yeah, I think that the biggest difference between him and Brook Lopez, there are a lot, obviously, but when Brook got the ball in a tight space, his touch on like little floaters and push shots is like otherworldly. And Mozgov, it's not going to happen. He's very clumsy. He's going to turn it over a lot, travel, just run into people. And he's going to someone that he does have decent touch when he has time. He's a pretty good free throw shooter, can hit a mid-range shot. And obviously every Net fan knows that he's been trying to expand his three-point game and hit a couple in the preseason. So that's not a bad sign, obviously. But I think that just like Brook Lopez being the outlet for all the guards on the team was so huge. And I think that they might need to struggle and they might be forced to kind of go to the rim more even when they don't have the right angle or kind of when they're forcing things, just because Mozgov, he's not someone that you're going to give the ball to and expect positive results.
All right. You mentioned the touch of Brook Lopez. Someone the Nets hoping can replicate a little bit of that down the road. Rookie Jared Allen, do you think he has the makings of a good jump shot? And how do you think that touch around the rim is going to affect his playing time this season?
I think that he could be a decent shooter. He has good touch. His form looks a little weird to me. It's kind of like off to the side and out in front. I don't know if you've felt the same way. It's not the most natural. The Nets might want to rework that. Obviously, they've seen success with that. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, his form looks a little bit better this year. They've kind of gotten rid of a lot of the hitch that he used to have. So maybe the new coaching staff under Kenny Atkinson can help improve that with Jared Allen. But doesn't seem to have the – he's not a great free throw shooter. I think it was about 56% last year at Texas. But he's someone that doesn't really need to be a great jump shooter. If he can be that kind of vertical spacing guy – along the lines of someone like Clint Capella, then that's all he needs to do because he provides such a great outlet for alley-oops to the Nets and really make the pick-and-roll game a lot more devastating. So that's an element that they didn't really have last year. So he can bring that to the team. And I know Kenny Atkinson always preaches spacing, but vertical spacing can be as important as horizontal, I guess, 2D spacing.
I think that's an apt point. And The thing you got to remember is he doesn't have to become a great 3-point shooter to be effective. What would really work for him and work for the Nets system is if he could develop a jumper kind of 10 feet and in on either baseline. I know that's a spot that's not really frequently used by bigs in the NBA, but if it kind of fits with the Nets system. Like if you have a guy like Lynn or a guy like Russell that can break down a defense, and we just talked about this with Mozgov, if the big's right underneath the basket, it's going to clog everything up. But if that guy can even be 10 feet out on the baseline, and if you're Lynn or Russell and you're playing with three shooters and every defender sticking to a shooter and a big is helping off Allen, if you can pass it to him and he can hit that baseline jumper, that makes a world of difference. And I think that's something that's very realistic. I know going back and watching tape of him at Texas, that was a shot that he didn't necessarily take frequently, but when he did, it looked really good. And he does have a natural touch. And I think we both felt that he was rushing a little bit when we've seen him in preseason. And that also is really natural. But if he can kind of bring that out in games over time, and who knows how he could expand from there, that would really complement his ability to just go up and jam home lobs.
Yeah, I think another important factor for a lot of these centers in that DeAndre Jordan mold is to be able to kind of hit a jump hook when you're switched onto a guard, because the way to stop his pick and roll attack a lot of times is to switch. And if you're if another team's point guard can guard your center in the paint without any consequences, that's going to be a real negative for your offense. So if you can get deep position and just make a 6-foot hook, that's going to be so huge for your offense, because it shows these defenses that they can't just switch easily. And then it's going to give your guards more opportunities once you show that you have that in your repertoire.
All right. Final Nets player we're previewing this preseason: younger brother of Luke, older brother of Cody, Tyler Zeller. Can he resurrect his career, and will his skilled game make him a Kenny Atkinson favorite?
I wouldn't go favorite, because I just don't think that he has any standout attribute that would make him play over Mozgov or Jared Allen or even a guy like Booker or AC playing center. But he's someone that I think will be a decent player. He's only 27, which I feel like he's been around forever, and also spent a lot of time at North Carolina. So it's interesting to see that he's not too old. I think he just needs to get back in shape. Didn't play that much with Boston last year. But he's always someone that's been a very good player in transition, gets down the court very well, has a pretty good mid-range game, solid passer. So he's someone that, if he can get back in shape and Kenny Atkinson feels comfortable with his defense, if his passing could really unlock a lot of things in the Nets offense from the high post.
Yeah, I told you, I think offensively he really is kind of a natural fit with this team. And when we talk about pacing, I think most people generally assume it refers to playing in transition, which really does lend itself to Tyler Zeller's game. But I'm looking forward to this Nets offense, particularly with Jeremy Lin being in his second year running it. And then you have D'Angelo Russell, who's such a smart player. And you have a guy in Spencer Dinwiddie, who, as we've said all preseason, is a master at playing with pace and manipulating pace. I think they're going to play fast in the half court. And I think all that really works well in Tyler Zeller's game, because his strength is his mobility. It's not his, for lack of a better term, physical strength. He's at his best when he can catch quickly and he can either just finish around the basket, or he could take a few dribbles, or he could take a short jumper, or he could make another pass quickly. And I think this Nets offense kind of lends itself to his skills when
Maybe that wasn't, I know Boston kind of plays like that, but maybe it didn't totally fit quite as well in Boston. But I think playing within that context, I think he could be a really efficient scorer, which he has been in the NBA in the past. And I think that's all the Nets can really ask out of him is kind of their emergency third center. And I'm pretty sure we're both in agreement that the Nets are going to go small more often than they're going to throw Zeller out there.
Yeah, he's inactive for tomorrow's game along with Isaiah Whitehead. So that kind of gives you an idea of where he is in the rotation to start the year.
Yeah, I don't see him as an essential piece.
to say the least, yeah.
Yeah, all right. I think we're gonna skip what grinds our gears tonight. I'll apologize on my end.
Injuries grind our gears.
Yeah. I know this wasn't a normal podcast, at least. Josh, you were great on my end in terms of energy. I think we're both just really bummed out about Hayward's injury. And then seeing that tonight, we, as you said, we both absolutely wish him the best, and we hope everyone in Nets Nation does the same. All that being said, extremely excited for the Nets season to start tomorrow. Josh, I want you to have the final word on this one. You're a lifelong Nets fan, and this team finally seems to have some hope back, so I'm sure that's extremely exciting.
Yeah, you know, it's very exciting. I think that we have a great infrastructure in place with Sean Marks and Kenny Atkinson, and these guys just really seem to know what they're doing, and they've gained the trust of Nets fans, which after the Billy King era, it was not an easy thing to do. And I think getting D'Angelo Russell, who has the potential to be that blue chip talent, face of the franchise type player, and surrounding him with terrific quality players like Jeremy Lin and Damari Carroll with some young guys, I really think that this could be the start of something. I've gone on record before, but my official win prediction for the season is 31-51, and I think one of those 31 wins will be tomorrow against the Indiana Pacers.
Certainly something all Nets fans can look forward to. You want to get the latest on the Pacers, even just for one night, you could check out the latest episode of Locked on Pacers. I'm sure they'll have some shape or form of preview for this game. And as always, encourage you to check out the entirety of the Locked on Podcast Network. If you haven't, please drop a review on iTunes for us. Give us 5 stars. Give us 4 stars. Less than that, maybe skip it. For Josh, I'm Gavin. We will be back either, I'm not 100% sure we're going to do one post-game tomorrow, but either post-game tomorrow or the day after, we'll be back for a reaction and our first time seeing the Nets live in the regular season. Until then, good luck. Bye.
Napa know-how. It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how. Napa know-how. At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum 3 items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.